Everybody, today is Friday, March 3rd, 2017, and this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everyone. It is a nippy 30 degrees and light snow with gray skies here in upstate New York, and I saw this weekend it's going to go down into the single digits, so much for being almost 70 just a few days ago. We're going to get a deep freeze again. So, where did I leave off yesterday? We titled the show DARPA, Berkeley Neural Dust, Electroceuticals, Fitbit Implants, and the Internet of Everything. Now, I'm going to tell you guys, the last couple days, we've been doing some hard-hitting topics. We dealt with DARPA, of course, always DARPA. We talked about Google, Eric Schmidt, Jared Cohn, Peter Thiel, Smart Dust, Berkeley, and all these mad science projects that are going on. We started to get a few technical issues a few days ago, but I kind of ignored it. I got over all the white screens, but then yesterday my bumper just out of the blue didn't play. I was like, that was odd, but I made it. Well, I got to tell you, yesterday, if this is a coincidence, it's quite a coincidence. Because yesterday was the day of forced upgrades for me. And I mean forced upgrades on my phone. It then made my phone not work too well for the whole time I was out getting things done yesterday. And then Skype. And I know that Skype had been trying to force an upgrade over the last few weeks or so. They warned you and warned you and warned you, but I'm really bad at upgrading. And one of the reasons why I don't upgrade on this one machine is because, like I said before, this is the land of bringing the old machines back to life here. I have a Vista machine. Anyone remembers Vista? I bet there's many of you that even don't even know what Vista was because it was pretty short-lived. But I have a Vista machine that was an old work machine. Probably can't do much of anything except, it holds pictures. I have a hard drive full of all my old pictures, family pictures, cat pictures, lots and lots of cat pictures, kid pictures, and run Skype, which I had my microphone connected to on the boom, and I would do my show here every day. So yesterday, Jake from Antimedia was going to be going live, so I get up and I come out here, it's all cold, and I go to log into Skype to make sure I transfer the phones to him. Well, guess what? Can't get into Skype. Skype tells me I need to upgrade. It will no longer give me access until I upgrade. Well, that led me on. Mind you, this is at 11 o'clock last night. That led me on this machine, a 2.5 hour journey. Yes, I said a 2.5 hour journey to try to get Skype to upgrade. And no matter what I tried, and I spent an hour and a half in the knowledge base for Microsoft, turning on switches and turning off switches in command line, enabling and disabling services, but to no avail. Nothing would work. They'd given me some, I don't know, I'm sure it's because it's a Vista, and they've decided they discontinued all support, but they let me download the upgrade. They just won't let me install the upgrade. And then, even worse, I went and uninstalled the old Skype thinking, well, hey, maybe that's why it doesn't work. But now I can't install anything, including the web version. So my broadcast machine that I've used for 5 years that actually got that FBI virus way back in the Orion days, after we said every forbidden word that the TSA was going to use to look for terrorists. Yeah, that machine. And we managed to even bring that one back from the dead after they shut me off and turned off all internet after that quote-unquote virus hit. That machine is no longer capable of doing Skype. I think we need to have a funeral. Like, I'm so upset about this. So Microsoft, after 2.5 hours on that machine, took me out. So by that time, it was like 1:30 or so in the morning. And I'm coming to the realization that if I don't get this fixed, I'm not going to be able to do a show tomorrow. So I came over to my other machine where I queue up all my articles. And decided, you know what, this machine is probably the newest out of all, so let's just download the upgrade, bite the bullet, and do it. Well, I downloaded the upgrade. 40 minutes sitting, spinning, saying, we're doing a quick upgrade. This will only take a minute. 40 minutes later, I decided to hit cancel. What I noticed while the 40 minutes was going on of quote-unquote installing was that my hard drive was being scanned. You know what it sounds like when you're doing an antivirus or whatever, and they're scanning every file. Oh, yes, Microsoft Cyber Patrol. You got a good look-see at two of my machines yesterday. So I cancel. Then the machine was, like, real sluggish. Nothing was moving around. I couldn't really click on anything. Any of my browsers were just kind of, like, real slow. And I happened to look in Task Manager. And there's an SVC host, which if you go into services, there's usually all kinds of things that are tied to that. But and I've seen this a few times before, and I swear to God, they must be taking snapshots of machines when they do this. But it showed, like, 1.9 gig. It was open in this SVC host. It was taking 100% of every bit of memory on my computer. So I killed it. I tried to install the web Skype. The web Skype, even though it allowed me to call UCY. According to UCY, I received no phone calls. So I had to go back again. And by this time, it was 2:30, maybe. I finally finished at 4, just so you know. That was when I finally got to go to bed. And I think I should be billing Microsoft for my services. Because everything was fine until they locked me out of my accounts. So I went back and I attempted the Skype desktop install for the second time on the second computer. This time only took about 10 minutes. I finally got it installed. I got it open. That 1.9 gig file that they were doing who knew what with was all gone, and I was able to get in, and then being very angry and tired, not do anything else except go to sleep. So I don't know why I mentioned that. Yesterday was the day of high levels of frustration. I mean, it was from the moment I woke up. Nothing was easy yesterday. But lots and lots and lots of weirdnesses and lots of forced upgrades. I mean, my cell phone is doing stuff now after those weird things that were happening yesterday, and it kept rebooting in the middle of phone calls, and it was all the graphics would get real big, like all the numbers on the dial pad. And then the machine would, the phone would turn off, like reboot. And I started noticing I've never, ever, 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 ever had voice activation turned on my phone. And yesterday, time I'm trying to make a phone call, it's trying to do voice activation. Now, the joke is on the phone, if it's still the same, but I set my language as Polish. And no, I no longer speak Polish. I took it in college, but hardest language I ever studied. But yeah, voice activation all of a sudden got turned on somehow on my phone. And this little red icon now in my upper tray that apparently for all these years after voicemail stopped alerting me, voicemails are back on again. So I don't know. They did something weird. So just a warning to everyone. The reason why I'm telling you this is because I am not paranoid. No, no, no. I think yesterday was the beginning of something new. You know, we have this toxic language detector that we'd read about. And we have, within the last few days, YouTube has throttled back now on video uploads. So you can only do a few at a time and every half hour. So yesterday I tried, after that horrible experience with all those hours with Skype. And mind you, had I not done that, I would have been taking a snow day today. And I was really mad because we have so much stuff lined up on Smart Dust, and we're going to get there here in about 5 seconds. I want to continue from where we left off, but just saying, the reason why I'm mentioning all this is because it seems to me like they have put a new phase into place that's getting ready to roll out here, and I can guarantee you all that noise I heard in that 40-minute upgrade was to get a good scan of my machine. Think about all the millions of users that use Skype. Everyone had to upgrade within the last few days. So every single one of those people just gave Microsoft Cyber Patrol Center a brand new snapshot of what is on their machines. How convenient. You know, couple that with the Google data and your searches and your phone calls and everything else. And they have quite extensive information on you. By the way, with all this craziness with Skype, if anyone's running Skype, go into the bowels of Skype under options, tools options. Click around on some of those and take a look, because I discovered after the upgrade, they had turned on Skype Translator. And we read all about these translators. These translators are utilizing AI in the background and able to take your language, regardless of whether or not it's grammatically correct, or if you're writing in straight language versus code, puts intelligence against it and it figures out what you're saying. Doing natural language processing with trying to find, you know, deep learning and trying to find meaning in things that maybe are in the context. So just beware that that translation is turned on. You may want to turn that off. We read all about that. And the Microsoft, I think, was pretty neck and neck with Google. It's a scary thought. I would say actually check all your settings if your Android got forced. I went to see some friends at the end of the hellish day in the afternoon that I had. I had an invite to go see some friends that I hadn't seen since Thanksgiving. And stop over for a little bit. So I figured on my way through town, I was passing by anyway, so I'd stop in. And my one guy friend, as I'm bitching because that happened to my phone while I was on my way, my guy friend said that, he's like, do you have an Android? Oh, yeah, same thing just happened to me. I got all these updates and they forced them all. So just be aware that I'm pretty certain that there was the next version of spyware has been installed across the matrix, and check your settings. I don't know. I mean, I'm not really sure how to protect ourselves. Maybe one of my friends told me about buying track phones. There's also things such as Snapchat disappearing messages, but I really don't trust that they really disappear. They probably go to some CIA Amazon cloud As part of the disappearing act, wink. Anyway, all right, so let's get to the topic du jour. By the way, I want to thank anyone and everyone who leaves me comments and sends me messages, because I know I'm so busy, guys. There's just not even enough seconds in the day to sleep. It makes me sad because I don't get very much of it. But I try. So I promise I will look at links and I will respond to messages. I really try, guys, but I read every single one of them. Just know that. And I appreciate them as well. All right. So we titled the show yesterday, DARPA, Berkeley, Neural Dust, Electroceuticals, Fitbit Implants, and the Internet of Everything. And the reason why these upgrades, these forced upgrades, these screwed up upgrades that are happening to our devices are so important, not only because it's the newest spyware that's installed, and we've talked about places such as Hacking Team working with governments, finding vulnerabilities, getting into the back end to be able to surveil, but we also have talked about Mayhem. It's the Carnegie Mellon AI search and destroy immune system for the internet, which we discovered was deployed quietly in a commercial setting right now. Skynet has been quietly sippy cupped released to see how it works out, see what vulnerabilities it can find. And that's going to be the future protector of the Internet of Everything, which we have also established with things such as Fitbit implants, electroceuticals, neural dust, and all these other newfangled 21st century technologies. You, me, Nana, Susie, and Jenny are all going to become a part of that Internet of Everything. And as biology and technology merge more and more, they will be giving us forced upgrades that don't quite work out. My case in point for every show I think I've ever done, if I had to boil it down to one concept, that is it. All right. So we ended the show yesterday, and I'm going to tell you too, anybody who looked at my notes and said, Jewel, I was going through your notes while the show was playing, and you stopped at the Internet of Things being a pit stop to smart dust. And yes, it's because I had an appointment yesterday and had to get out of here and had an hour drive and still had to shower and everything. So I only got half my notes done. I will try to finish that today, but I also have not had anything cut for the entire weekend. So I probably have 20 shows to cut here in the next 24 hours or so. So it's not going to be good. And I'm starting to feel like I'm getting sick again. I've been out in public. Damn it, I should have had my handy wipes with me. This has just not been a good week. All right, so we left off of the story. The Internet of Things is just a pit stop on the way to smart dust. And this was out of Motherboard, Vice, one of Vice's publications. And they ended that story saying this is happening faster than you might think. And we called that. We absolutely 100% called that. And things are getting miniaturized at an exponential rate. We read out of Berkeley. Berkeley had released a press release back at the end of last year about sprinkling of neural dust opens doors to electroceuticals. How easy this would be to get into our nerves, our muscles, and our organs, and then use that to monitor them. They seem to think this is going to be a great idea. Remember, we've read before that they want to be able to monitor us with sensors, just like they do a car. So you could tell when something is going awry in the car and take it in for service. Well, why should we wait until stage four cancer? Maybe we should find out whether or not something is going on. And you know, I'm all for that, but there are other ways other than inhaling a big poof of neural dust and having it embed itself all throughout your soft tissue to be able to early diagnose. I mean, there are some blood tests now that just look for certain proteins. You know, each cancer is a signature. And they can look for proteins in your blood to see whether or not there's any activity. And there would be way easier ways rather than implanting sensors forever inside of you. But MIT Technology Review and Scientific American came out with a couple stories at the time. This one was in August again. not a Scientific American. Neural dust could enable a Fitbit for the nervous system. And there were two stories. The one out of Berkeley press release, and now this one, that it talks about this being a Fitbit, an implantable Fitbit, but a Fitbit just the same. And remember when we first started talking about wearables and how they tried to now groom us that we got to be healthy, we got to live forever, longevity, Johnny, you got to run. And it's going to be running from the drones with the laser weapons and the HD cameras. But for right now, it's all about getting fit. And they have shown time and time again in studies that the more you exercise, the younger your cells stay. And that is true. I even see how it could possibly work, where it flushes out the bad and allows in the good. Make sure you hydrate, hydrate, hydrate. But along with that comes a lot of other things like nutrition and sleep and not getting angry, keeping away from stress. I mean, we've discovered digging into even DNA damage, that all those things that are bad for us that we do DNA damage. We're talking, and including your free radicals, we got all these chemical pollutants, and, you know, whether or not you believe it, yes, I believe it, because I've had a radiation detector running for 6 years now, right at my sliding glass door edge in the living room, right to the outside. And we watch it every day. We see it go up and down, and as the wind comes in, you see the different weather patterns bringing elevated radiation through my home. And so, you know, as we're exposed to all these pollutants and free radicals that are doing DNA damage, a little bit of exercise, you know, it might perk you up a little bit, but it's not going to fix everything. But they're really pushing this, and now they're pushing social media and competing against your friends with your Fitbit. See how many steps you could go. See how many miles you can run. I saw my friend last night on Facebook posted that they did almost 70 miles for the month of February per their Fitbit. My dad runs his on his phone, and he does his treadmill on his stationary bike every day, and that man does like 10 miles. Would you imagine? Times 30, that's 300 miles. You know, I mean, I'm not going to say that being active is bad, because it's not. I wish I could get off my ass and do my show while I was up exercising. That would, like, kill two birds with one stone, since I'm here almost every day. But on the other hand, be careful what the reasons are that you are doing it for, because we have discussed how every bit of data that we feed the machine is feeding intelligence to the machine. And that's going to be the same machine that not only becomes smarter than us, but also learns all the chinks in the human armor. So when the day comes that they need to flip the chessboard, take control, and tell us puny humans that we no longer are the most intelligent creatures on this planet, and we have foibles, especially the fact that we have emotions. Because our emotions make for bad decisions sometimes. They're more rational. You know, until that day happens, that data that you're going to feed, and it's beyond Fitbit data, it's any data at all. Like me doing this show is feeding the machine. But any data that you're feeding that machine is going to work against us at some point as a whole. There's this whole collective that is being collected. We are going to be archived, bagged, and tagged. I just saw a story today. We talked about, like, okay, Joel, get really off topic, because this is not about smart dust. I know, I know. But I saw a story last night, 4 a.m., while I was trying to wind down. I was already in my pajamas at this point. But I saw a story, an update to the DNA storage. Remember we talked about that? They were able to store a poem, a really long poem, on a strand of DNA. And if they encased it in glass, it had some insane lifespan, like a billion years or something. And they were like, wow, non-biodegradable storage, unlike, you know, platters or CDs or whatever, that over time you might lose your data. Well, researchers have now been able to store a computer operating system and a short movie on DNA as well. So how does that make you feel? They're utilizing, I joked before that they were going to utilize human DNA to store cat pictures. Well, just about. We put an operating system and a short movie on it. It just makes me very, very, very sad that this is where the world has come to. So let's push buttons, flip switches, turn humans into storage devices, and into cyborgs. This is a story out of DARPA, again in August, about this neural dust. Implantable neural dust enables precise recording of nerve activity, and that's what we discovered. They want to be able to record everything that is going on. Remember, there was a provision in the 21st Century Cures Act that got passed in December that talked about neurological surveillance, non-invasive. They were going to be able to surveil people with Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or any other future mental disorder that you've been diagnosed with to make sure that you're safe, make sure you're not a danger to yourself or others. Well, this is going to be something that might bring them further along to that dream. Therapeutic modulation of activity of the body's peripheral nervous system holds a world of potential, and this is out of DARPA's DARPA.mil website, holds a world of potential for mitigating and treating disease and other health conditions. And if researchers can figure out a feasible long-term mechanism for communicating with nerves and pathways that make up the body's information superhighway between the spinal cord and the organs, that would be a big step forward. What does feasible look like? Well, small is the best start. We read about smaller, better, faster. That's the way it's all headed. Small enough to someday perhaps be injected or ingested. We had also discussed sprayed from the sky and breathed in. But also precise, wireless, stable, and comfortable for the user. Of course, we have to worry about the user's comfort. And if they're embedded in your neocortex, you're never even going to know it. Modern electrode-based recording technologies feature some, but not all, of these qualities. Hardwired solutions present challenges for chronic use. And we've run across that word for a few times for implants, chronic implants, because sometimes chronic implants would form little cysts. See, that was the problem. But they've gotten around it now. They had these new brain electrodes we read about the other day that don't cause scar tissue either. So, wow, what a brave new world we are entering at this point. But while existing wireless solutions cannot be adequately scaled down to sizes needed to record activity from small diameter nerves and record independently from many discrete sites within a nerve bundle, DARPA's electrical prescription program, and I talked about this yesterday when the Berkeley article had mentioned electroceuticals. I was like, oh, the DARPA ElectRx program, and here we go. DARPA's electrical prescription program, more affectionately known as ElectRx, is focused in part on overcoming these constraints and delivering interface technologies. Remember, we're talking about the human body that are suitable for chronic use, for biosensing. Ding-a-ling-a-ling. How many times have I told you? Look out, it's all about biosensors, and here it comes. And neuromodulation of peripheral nerve targets. And that means bzz, 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 that's the zippity zapping that I warned about as well. Now, as described in results published today in the journal Neuron, a DARPA funded research team led by University of California's Berkeley's Department of Electrical and Computer Sciences, Electrical Engineering and Computer Sciences, it's funded by DARPA, has developed a safe millimeter scale wireless device, small enough to be implanted in individual nerves, capable of detecting electrical activity of nerves, as well as muscles deep within the body that use ultrasound for power coupling and communication. And this is the same implant, the smart neural dust implant that we talked about yesterday. But now this is an announcement on DARPA's page, so it means something. When I see it on DARPA's DARPA.mil site, that means something to me. I'm going to have all the articles written, all over in as many papers, even the New York Times. Once it hits the New York Times, you know that New York City and the rest of the country has at least seen it in passing. But when it's on DARPA.mil, it means it's real. It means it's got funding. It means this is something they're really working on and they're proud of. They want you to know about. It means it's something that's probably pretty far along, and we established that yesterday. Since the 90s, I have known about them working on smart dust in the labs. But this is one step further from smart dust. This is not for environmental monitoring necessarily. This is neural dust. These are biosensors. These get implanted one way or the other, whether you eat them. And remember, we found there were two routes to get into the body that they research and have come to the conclusion is the best way to get some sort of nanoparticulate into you, and that would be through your small intestine. And lots of us have leaky gut syndrome because of the glyphosate and the stress and all the bad gut bacteria that was damaged by the glyphosate in our food, as well as many other things, or through our nostrils. I was trying to remember the olfactory system. And once you get it up your nose, there's a direct route from your nose into and across that blood-brain barrier. And they discovered in doing research for Alzheimer's and other things with nanoparticulates for doing MRIs that ultrasound opens that blood-brain barrier to the brain after inhalation to allow them to pass directly through. Well, they've discovered that in this DARPA document as well, that ultrasound, we found out, also powers these things because they are piezoelectric, and they use the sound waves from the ultrasound to give it electricity and as well to zippity-zap your nerves, whether it be your peripheral nervous system or a vagus nerve or a muscle or a neuron or whatever. These devices are called neural dust. And the team completed its first in vivo test of this technology in rodents. Neural dust represents a radical departure from the traditional approach of utilizing radio waves for wireless communications with implanted devices, says Doug Weber, a DARPA program manager for ElectRx. And remember, we read radio waves do not properly penetrate the body, but ultrasound does. And ultrasound is ubiquitous because we're already using it in lots of healthcare settings. The soft tissues of our body consist mostly of salt water, and sound waves pass freely through these tissues and can be focused with pinpoint accuracy at nerves deep inside of our body, while radio waves cannot. And indeed, this is why sonar is used to image objects in the ocean, while radar is used to detect objects in the air, which I did not realize that. That is pretty damn interesting. Remember, DARPA is the military-industrial complex's black hole, mad science gone mad technology science center. So anything DARPA is a part of, there's a plan to integrate it into the war machine. That's why this is frightening, people. And all of this, most of this technology that we talk about on a daily basis, was all sprinkle funded by DARPA, universities, hospitals, getting all these smarty pants to work on finding ways to bring the human race 1.0 closer to the end. But they're moving us toward 2.0. I went to see my friend yesterday, and I don't know if you're listening. Hello. But he spent many, 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 many years as a super high-end professional services-esque type engineer. That's what he did for a living. And he even told me, and he's a musician, and he's retired now, but he was telling me yesterday that he was the very, very first person ever in Buffalo to own a Kurzweil synthesizer. I I told him that might actually be enough to get him an interview. I begged him. I'm like, would you please interview? He's like the alter Kurzweil. He's the good side, super genius. And Kurzweil has kind of gone astray, but maybe we can talk some sense into him. Anyway, I digress. Indeed, this is why sonars use to image objects in the ocean, while radar is used to detect objects in the air. And by using ultrasound to communicate with the neural dust, the sensors can be made smaller and placed deeper inside of the body. Just what we want. By needle injection. Ding-a-ling-a-ling. Don't step right up for that newest injection. Or by other non-surgical approaches. Unquote. The prototype neural dust motes currently measure 0.8 millimeters by 3 millimeters by 1 millimeter as assembled with commercially available components, which is crazy. And the researchers estimate that by using custom parts and processes, they could manufacture individual motes of 1 cubic millimeter or less in size, possibly as small as 100 microns per side. The small size means multiple sensors could be placed near each other to make more precise recordings of nerve activity from many sites within a nerve group. And though their minuscule size is an achievement in and of itself, the dust motes are as impressive for the elegant simplicity of their engineering. Each sensor consists of only 3 main parts: a pair of electrodes to measure nerve signals, a custom transistor to amplify the signal, and a piezoelectric crystal that serves the dual purpose of converting mechanical power to externally generated ultrasound waves and communicating the recorded nerve activity. The neural dust system also includes an external transceiver board that uses ultrasound to power and communicate with the motes by emitting pulses of ultrasonic energy and then listening for reflected pulses. During the testing, the transceiver board was positioned approximately 9 millimeters away from the implant. So they're going to have to extend that reach a little bit if they want this to be remotely controlled. But proof of concept. The piezoelectric crystal is key to the design of neural dust, pulses of electrosonic energy emitted by the external board affect the crystal, and while some of the pulses are reflected back to the board, others cause the crystal to vibrate. This vibration converts the mechanical power of ultrasound into electrical power, which is supplied then to the dust motes transistor. And meanwhile, any extracellular voltage change across the motes to electrode recording mechanisms generated by nerve activity modulates the transistor's gate, which then changes the current flowing between the terminals. And these changes, after the vibration of the crystal, are reflected back with ultrasonic energy. Another benefit of the system is that ultrasound is safe in the human body, or so they say. And ultrasound technologies have long been used for diagnostic and therapeutic purposes. Most existing wireless sensors use electromagnetic energy in the form of radio waves for coupling and communicating. But these systems become inefficient for smaller sensors less than 5 millimeters. And to work at smaller scales, these systems must increase their energy output. And much of that energy gets absorbed by your surrounding tissue. How can that be good for you? You know, we've looked at, and we should look at again soon here in the future, what all these different frequencies are and what the research done has been, because we discovered way back when that there hasn't been a lot of research at all being done about these frequencies that we are bathed in ubiquitously from all of our electronic devices on a daily basis. There are soon going to be more with the advent of 5G in the sky, as well as millimeter wave. And now they're talking about putting little sensors in your body and pounding them with ultrasound. And much of that energy gets absorbed by your surrounding tissue. That cannot be good for reproducing cells. I mean, that's what causes mutation and things of that nature, damage. This isn't good. This is not good. And one of the questions I have, you know, I want to know, And somebody in chat suggested this, and I thought this was a really good idea. We should start tracking what frequency each one of these technologies works at, and we could even make, if anyone's used Google Docs before, I don't use them for anything of any importance, but I do have, like, when I work on projects with somebody or I'm helping somebody work on a construction project or something, and we're coming up with parts lists and pricing. This is one of the things that I did as many years of being an engineer is I was a kick-ass project manager once the job got sold. And project manage is a forte, but we should create just a Google sheet that I give open access to everyone, public, not a big deal. This is just the one sheet. And we could all go in and start editing. I'll give everyone edit capability as long as you promise not to screw up anything that's there. And we go in and do it as a group collaboration research project to start tracking down, ultrasound and millimeter wave and microwaves and start finding all these frequencies. One of these days, actually, I will get onto my personal Facebook and see if I can track him down. Prepper Chick had him on a couple times. And he talked about, he's a radio, a ham radio operator, and by profession, he's an engineer. But I actually grew up with him. He was a year or two older than me. I went to school with his brother, Pat. But I'm sure if I say, hey, this is Joel from school, you were on with Prepper Chick, and he'd be like, oh my God, he'll remember me. But we should get him on because he knows tons about radio and frequencies, and that would be a really good conversation to have at some point in the future. But anyway, ultrasound has the advantage of penetrating deeper into tissues at lower power levels, reducing the risk of adverse effects while yielding excellent spatial resolution. The proof of concept was developed under the first phase of the DARPA ElectRx program, and the research team will now continue to work on further miniaturizing their sensors, ensuring your biocompatibility. Of course, they want to get them into every one of us, increasing the portability of the transceiver board, and then achieving clarity in signal processing while multiple sensors are placed near each other. So what do you think of them apples? So it is DARPA that is full on out developing this technology in cahoots with UC Berkeley. Like I said yesterday, that's where Manon Napolitano went to. She's now the president of the University of California system and the former head of the Department of Homeland Security. So it's got to make you feel all kinds of warm and fuzzy. Step right up for your new neural implant, your newer new neural dust implant, all in the name of keeping you healthy and keeping you safe. All right, so there was another story out of ARC Applause. And this was from August 19th, 2015, which happened to be UCY's fourth anniversary, I believe. Smart dust may become the pinnacle innovation of the Internet of Things. Garner still believes that dust will eventually be smart. A cloud of nanoparticles washes through a field. Tiny sensors gather data on variance in air current, moisture, and temperature. The pH balance of the water in the soil is constantly monitored, and the growth rate, health, and sustainability of the crop is continually assessed. Remember yesterday, too, we had read an excerpt out of Motherboard, and they were talking about also tracking bugs and things with these. Now crops, now humans. This is the horror that I've been trying to explain for all these years, this vision of everything being connected. Guys, they're really, really working on this. This isn't fantasy at all. They really are working on this. I was telling my friend yesterday that at this point in time, I've been doing self-checks on myself. All these years, I pinch myself. I go, Joel, are you sure? Are you sure this is really happening? I mean, you put all these dots together and paint this really scary-looking dystopian future. Could it really be going that way? Well, I told my friend yesterday, I'm absolutely certain now. You know, I was probably about 90% certain before. And as the timeline gets closer and closer to that day when we merge with the machine, it gets more and more certain. But after yesterday, after that show we did yesterday, I'm 100%. I'm at that point now. I'm 100% certain that every horror that we've discussed is about ready to happen. And that's not a good thing. Not a good thing at all. We need to start coming up with some counter plan, some counter idea on how we're going to battle this, because whether or not we want it, whether or not we are for or against this, they're going to make it happen. They are going to use medical tyranny to get it inside of us. And if we don't step up, well, these things are millimeter in size and soon to be nano in size. And like I said, I've always had a suspicion that maybe some of those quote-unquote chemtrails include some other things maybe we could be breathing in, especially if they are that small. And like I said, we discovered that one of their favorite ways to get nanoparticulates into the body and into the brain is through your nostrils. So I wouldn't put it past them. Human experimentation at the hands of our own government has been going on for a very long time, and most of the time without our knowledge, over large populations. The dust of nanoparticles, some may call it smart dust, can detect invaders in the field, be it a disease infecting crops, small animals, or humans, and then dispatch another cloud of dust to combat the threat. Now, this is beyond frightening because we've already talked about DARPA's Insect Allies program, and that is where they'll be using a bacteria. They'll take that bacteria and infect the insect. And then they will take the infected insect, and remember, it's a genetically modified bacteria. They've sucked out the guts. They've put in some new guts, and then they infected the insect. Oh, look, my cell phone just rebooted itself again. And then they set the bugs free on the crops, and as they munch on the crops, their spittle that is infected with this genetically modified mad science bacteria that DARPA created will then get passed into the DNA of the plant and literally genetically modify the plant while it is growing during a single growing season. And that's all being done in the name of protecting you against bioterror from plant crop bioterror, animal bioterror from other countries is how they're selling it. But I was also thinking, we read all about the history of the biowarfare program in the United States and Plum Islands and Fort Detrick, Maryland. And we've read about how even in 1972, when Nixon inked that agreement to end chemical and biological warfare production, it never ended. He had maintained that we were going to keep a defensive posture and keep developing vaccines against future pathogens. But one of the bits of research that they were doing at Plum Island for a very long time was entomological biological warfare, and they would be using insects as disease vectors. And we did many, many, many shows on insects as disease vectors when we first started reading about Oxitec and the genetically modified mosquitoes. And I, you know, back a couple weeks ago, there was a brand new story about that, and they literally were talking about utilizing mosquitoes as flying vaccinators. There was that one paper we found in Japan where they had already established proof of concept utilizing mosquitoes to spread pathogens, good or bad, within the population. But there was a new story on that. I'll have to remember this weekend and see if I can find it. So they can detect invaders in a field, whether they be, oh, I don't know, genetically modified insects that could be used for good or bad to infect or to cure diseased crops or humans. They also can detect small animals in a field. Well, how interestingly, we just read about some of their experiments they're doing on mice shooting lasers at the mouse's head, turning them into predators whose jaws start chomping down in biting motions. So yes, we'd have small armies of remote-controlled killer rodents that we will be able to detect as well if we launch nanoparticulate dust all over the field. And we could combat them by just releasing another cloud of dust, and maybe this would be toxic dust this time to combat the threat. I mean, what a horrifying, horrifying future this world is going to be if this is the type of stuff that we're talking about now as every day. Smart dust may seem like an idea out of science fiction, but the technology behind the concept is very real. In fact, DARPA started doing tests on the concept of smart dust when, in the early 1990s, ding-a-ling-a-ling, I told you, military tacticians could envision smart dust as some kind of advanced scout in theaters of war. See, like I said, everything is about the war machine from DARPA, not about keeping you safe or healthy. And while the agricultural industry, wink, could also benefit in the scenario described above, because of course we got to come up with other things to spin the sale of us spending all your hard-earned tax dollars on something other than war machine. We can spin it out and use it for commercial purposes, and someone can make an IPO, make bazillions of dollars. Smart dust could measure the health of water supplies as well, so let's make sure we get it in our water, or nuclear facilities, or even large groups of people. And they probably would be considered unruly and have red flag dossiers. Here comes the smart dust. Poop over the protesters. Don't stop sneezing there, Johnny. It opens up that blood-brain barrier. And don't struggle, because it makes it much easier. I mean, this really is frightening, beyond frightening, and they could have already been doing this. Again, 1990s, and this is just coming out now. We're going to tell you all about it 20 or 30 years down the line, because it's too late, Johnny. Remember, we saw an interview with Kurzweil one time where he had said that we were already far down the path of being transhumanized, and he didn't elaborate on that. And it made me really wonder what he was talking about. And I had considered maybe some of the stuff they put into vaccinations, some of the stuff that they're putting into our food. We have talked about nanotechnology and food that doesn't have to be labeled. But we forgot about smart dust. We could have been breathing this in for a very long time as well. Smart dust takes a variety of concepts that are now very familiar to technologists and attempts to shrink them down to a swarm of sensors, and we gotta love swarms, that can perform a variety of tasks. They learned all about swarms at MIT from insects. The current basis for theories of creating smart dust is built on the idea of MEMS. We've read about MEMS and various types of sensor technology, as well as RFID and laser communication, small cell batteries, and solar energy. And the various shapes or forms that all this technology exists in is not just nano-sized, but those will be necessary to make this dust truly smart. If you think about it, smart dust would be the technological pinnacle of what we now know is the Internet of Things. And you got to remember, this is the year before they announced the neural dust. We just read now over the last 2 days, two stories, maybe even three, about how neural dust is smart dust. Just really super small, that can easily be embedded inside of your soft tissue to biosensor monitor you ubiquitously. All right, so we are now going from the Internet of Things to the Internet of Everything. And yes, you, me, Nana, Johnny, Susie are now all endpoints on that Internet of Everything. But thank goodness, because we now have precision medicine, electronic medical health records, Fitbits, software as a service. We have Dr. Smartphone, Dr. Watson. This is all coming together in one big, ugly, scary, horrifying picture of what the next few years are going to be like for us. And there's no running, there's no hiding. They're going to find you, and if they're letting this stuff go into our atmosphere, well, that could explain like some of the weird allergic reactions people have, or some of that weird asthma. What was that one in Australia? Australia, one of our offshore mad science departments. What was that asthma? There was some kind of weird-ass asthma that happened at the end of last year that had 500 or 1,000 people all going to the hospital, and all these people got sick. And everyone said, whoa, that's weird. We've never heard of that before. That's a new one. Never before seen. Makes you wonder what was in that dust that caused all that asthma and all those hospital visits. So when are we going to see the first real incidences of smart dust? Well, commercially speaking, according to Gartner's annual hype cycle for emerging technologies, it'll be at least another 5 or 10 years, they say. But again, remember, this story was written 2 years ago in 2015, and with the law of exponential returns, I would say that that 5 to 10 year time frame is probably accelerated a bit, because it's happening, just like DARPA said, faster than we ever imagined. The Gartner Hype Cycle is a yearly map of where the current trends in technology actually stands. And we're not going to read about all these other ones. For the last couple of years, smart dust has been at the far left. It makes for a fascinating study in DARPA and the RAND Corporation. Ding-a-ling! Started research on smart dust more than 20 years ago, and corporations have been formed, good old little IPOs, to start building the capabilities needed to create smart dust. And they are also calling it Dust Networks, which was acquired by Linear Networks in 2011. Holograms, brain-computer interfaces, human augmentation, and quantum computing are all technologies that are also on the upward slope of the hype cycle, that have a basis in current reality and do not have a long time before they start affecting people's lives. If you read about technology media, you know what the top hype trends are right now: autonomous vehicles, the Internet of Things, machine learning, and wearables. And remember, this was 2015, and all of these technologies are on the very top of Gartner's hype cycle. But what about technology that is already past that and is starting to become a fabric of our lives? People could argue that augmented reality and virtual reality are not really about to wholly change the lives of the masses, but that would be a faulty assumption. And yes, with the advent of 5G, we can get a terabit per second ubiquitously from the sky, beaming down HD VR right to your eye goggles that are then having a direct connect to your optic nerve into that neocortex. I would say that in the future, that will be the full sucking into the matrix. And maybe you'll even need a nano implant to be able to get it 24/7. We read a couple different stories that had talked about how easy it would be with HDVR and a little nanobot attached to your neocortex to just be able to flip a literal switch and take the input that is going to your eyes and to your nerves and switch it over to some sort of other input, like what is being fed in through the VR goggles and maybe your VR suit, where it could literally transport you someplace else. All right, guys, well, I guess that's it for a Friday. Make sure you stick around, all kinds of great new ways.
This is Ozzy Skateboard, and you're listening to UCY